I just love it what you're doing, because that station just holds such a, I mean, I just love it. The other day, listen to me, about several months ago, my mother-in-law was in the hospital in Jonesboro, and we went to see her, and I went on a walk, a stroll, and my first spot was to KBTM. I mean, to me, it's not Jonesboro, Arkansas, it's KBTM, Arkansas, so.
Yeah, and I was glad when I, because I've only been up there twice since I went to school there, but I'm glad to see the building is still there now, a law office.
Yeah, it's a law office in the legal section of Jonesboro.
Yeah, the legal district. Yeah. Well, tell me how you came to work at KBTM. I guess you were a student there at A-State.
Yeah, I was at ASU. I knew a fellow. I'd been on the stage in my freshman year in college and gotten to know a guy named Bill Phillips. Is that right? Bill Phillips? Oh, I can't. Uh-oh, you better not quote me on that. But,
right.
Of course, we're being recorded. So, anyway, he was working there, and I had this big booming voice, and he said, you ought to go to work in Jonesboro at KBTM, because I was majoring in broadcasting. And he called, and I had a meeting with Alan Pattison, and then went to work in Houston, Texas with my father that summer of 69, and worked in Houston and lived with my father. They were separated. Anyway, Alan calls me in August of 69 and says, hey, I want to hire you. Come on up when you come back to school. I want you to do a shift for us. And man, that was the greatest day, because I thought, here we go. This is step one in taking over the Tonight Show. This is the beginning of a great career. So I was real dramatic with it, but I will never forget that phone call from Alan Pattison.
Yeah. So what was it like for you going into the radio station?
Well, the trouble was, I was overly dramatic and did think that this was the first step, and I was going to impress everybody right out of the box. And I think, as I recall, on my first day, I did every impression I had in my repertoire, all of them bad. And it was early in the first month or so that Alan Pattison called me. I was working afternoon drive, and Alan Pattison calls, and he goes, I'm spending a dime of my own money, because remember, there were no cell phones. He said, I'm spending a dime of my own money to call and tell you to shut up. Just shut up. Play the music.
Wasn't looking for the entertainer.
Yeah, exactly. I'll never forget his first call, and I'll never forget his second call.
So how, by the way, and Alan is like 83 now, and he is sharp as a tack, too.
I can believe it.
I interviewed him. He just recently got a master's degree at ASU.
See, I can believe it. In, don't tell me, criminology.
No, something to do with the Spanish language.
Ah, so. Well, he was always big with the, I can't think of the organization, but he's always been a big believer in diversity.
Yeah.
And here we were on the heels of the civil rights movement, and he made it a point to a concerted effort to hire African Americans into KBTM as early as 1969.
Hmm.
And I really admired him for that.
So what did you do there once you started?
When I got the job, I was afternoon drive to start. I had a thing I used to call the joke of the day that would be at 6:11 every evening. Wasn't exactly a big hit. Wasn't as big as the Morning Herald, which was at 9:30 with Clarence Adams, the Morning Herald was huge. So many people built their morning around it, and the showstopper in the Morning Herald was obituaries, a good 3 minutes of obituaries. And you heard of the top 20 hits. We had the top 20 obits.
Yeah, I got a tape of one Morning Herald from 1981 with Clarence Adams, and I was kind of shocked when it entered the obits phase.
Yep, and that's when I learned that there were so many relatives of people in Cricket County in Flint, Michigan. They'd gone up to work in the car factories up in Michigan, And whenever you'd have an obituary, every day there'd be somebody with a relative survived by someone in Flint, Michigan.
Wow.
And then years and years later, 35 years later, I would read by John Grisham, A Painted House. And the fact that there's a family moving up to Flint, Michigan is a key storyline in that novel written and situated in Northeast Arkansas.
Huh.
And it brought me back to KBTM.
Yeah. Well, so you were doing afternoons initially?
Yeah, and then I do Sunday mornings beginning at 6 o'clock and going until 2 in the afternoon. And we would start with, at 6 o'clock, H.L. Russell and the Black Gospel. That'd be for an hour. And then we would proceed to have every denomination known to man with 15 minutes. Except for 11 to 12 o'clock when we had the First Methodist Church with Worth Gibson. However, rather than listen to the First Methodist Church, I, Craig O'Neill, would play Led Zeppelin on the audition channel. If you left your remote switch in the neutral position on the board, whatever you played in audition would then be fed back down the line to your remote spot. One day I did that and fed Led Zeppelin back to the First Methodist Church over the PA. So people were hearing Worth Gibson say, "Let us pray," and then a whole lot of love.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
The phone rang off the wall.
I bet.
And Tom Fox, the local photographer, calls and goes, "What are you doing up there? We're getting rock and roll music
going." Oh, wow.
A great day for us all.
Yeah. And you didn't get fired for that?
Nope, didn't get fired for that. It was, I think they heard about 4 minutes of A Lot of Love.
That's incredible.
It's not a bad thing. It's really, when you get right down to it, it's not a bad thing to listen to in church, but not from Led Zeppelin.
Well, and you eventually worked your way into doing the morning, I guess?
Yeah. Actually took 3 months off to do voice work for an educational organization and then came back and in the fall of, let's see, came back and did mornings and that's when I learned and I'm really destined to be a morning man.
Uh-huh.
I woke up early and go in there and act a fool. But it wasn't the zany. It was pretty much tame. You heard it. So,
yeah, a few little quips here and there.
Yeah, did mornings. And then my favorite part of KBTM was the infancy of the FM. The FM was, at that time, was just two record changers through a board. And you had a stack of records on what would be two turntables, and you would every 30 minutes go down and turn the stack of records over. So if you were one of the 18 people in Craig County that had an FM radio in 1970, you heard the same record over and over, and sometimes it would stick. Or sometimes two records would come down, and one would be on top of the needle. And that wouldn't.
Hey.
Wasn't very good either.
Yeah, the FM, that must have been fun when FM was still not really listened to. And I've got the tapes of the first night in 74 when they made the upgrade to 100,000 watts and Dennis Rogers was on there playing progressive psychedelic rock.
Wow. So. And Dennis was my idol. I can still remember him opening records. I mean, because records would come into the station from these record companies just in bulk. And I just was so impressed by how much Dennis knew and how he could hear a song and know it was going to be a hit. It was a real interesting time because it was a crossroads in 1969, 70, 71. You had the infancy of FM. You had a conservative management team or manager in Clarence Adams, very conservative. You had the progressive liberal Alan Paterson to go with the wild rock Dennis Rogers to go with the overly dramatic Craig O'Neill. Of course, on the air, I was Randy Hankins, my real name. But it was a real interesting group of people. And on top of that, you had old crusty Paul Hoffman, who was the primary salesperson, who was just out there selling the devil out of advertising, dirt cheap. But they were making money.
Yeah. Hey, Clarence Adams, I don't know much about him. I know he had been there for decades. I think he had been hired in like 47 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was he like?
He had a definite way of doing things. He had a belief system that was entrenched in his personal history. He knew how to make a station successful, and he actually carried with him an incredible ability to work both sides, to know what worked in sales and to appreciate that. But at the same time, he always was conscious of news, and especially with the community. He knew people in the community just because he'd been on so long. And he didn't get out there MC stuff or make himself known in the community like you see now with radio personalities, but he'd just been doing it so long. And that Morning Herald, that was the mainstay of the radio station. That's where everybody wanted to advertise. That's what people wanted to sponsor. And Clarence knew what to put in it. Obituaries.
Uh-huh.
And KBTM was interesting, too. There were some great things there. I had, on Sunday, I did the Quartet Merry-Go-Round, sponsored by the Tri-County Burial Club, a Farmers Union funeral home. They had a Tri-County Burial Club. And the day they came out and they said, this is exactly the way it went. It's time for the Quartet Merry-Go-Round, brought to you by the Farmers Union Funeral Home and the Tri-County Burial Club, now with a drive-in window. And as soon as I said that, I almost lost it because I couldn't figure out why would a funeral home want a drive-in window? What, you don't have time to go in and see the body? They just, what, raise it? You look at the window, oh, that's him, and then you drive off. I couldn't figure that out. We also got a sponsor for the Holiday Death Toll. The Holiday Death Toll had an advertiser that sponsored it. It was always an insurance company. So you come on and you go, it's time now for the Holiday Death Toll, brought to you by Hogan Winters of Wiener, which was tough to say, especially if you had big lips. Hogan Winters of Wiener presents the Holiday Death Toll. Right now, on this Labor Day holiday, it's 568. And you had this feeling like you wanted to say, so get out there and drive like crazy so we can raise that and hit a new level.
Yeah.
But they were smart. I was Plazo the Clown a couple of times one summer.
What was that?
At the Caraway Plaza Shopping Center, Paul Hoffman goes out and I'll never forget it. He comes back and he has these two big contracts for it. They're going to buy out the weekend on KBTM. And Paul was so proud, and I was happy for him, and because they were new. Caraway Plaza Shopping Center was brand new in 1971.
Uh-huh.
And Paul said, yeah, we sold them. They're going to do this twice this summer. They're going to own the weekend. They were going to run ads and have specials in every store, plus an appearance by Plazo the Clown. I said, well, that's clever. Who's Plazo the Clown? And Paul looks at me and goes, you are. I had no idea. It was pretty weak.
Well, I guess that's to a good degree way a lot of small town stations of that era, that's the way a lot of them were.
And you got more education at the small town station doing 100 different things, writing copy, engineering sometimes even, Plazo the Clown. I was a sportscaster, which I dearly loved, morning show man. I got to know gospel music. It's really interesting. Alan Patterson, who was so devoted to diversity on the sociological side, his station had it on the programming side, too, so that whoever worked at KBTM came out of there with a general understanding of just about every facet of radio.
Yeah.
It was a degree. If you got the KBTM degree, that was the one that was gold.
Yeah. So any regrets when you left it? Was it hard? You went to KARN after that, right?
Right.
I guess you graduated, so you're probably ready to get out of Jonesboro.
Yeah. I worked at KBTM for a summer. Got arrested.
Aye.
I've been married for about a year, and my wife and I moved into a little house across from Jonesboro High School, and I would ride my bike in the mornings down to KBTM. And one more, and I had a goatee, and it was just awful looking goatee. It's the only time I've ever tried to grow anything that summer of 72.
Uh-huh.
And on the way down there on the way home, because I go home at noon, on the way home one day, the police pull me over. I'm on my bike now. Get the scene. I'm on my bicycle. The police pull me over, and they go, "A guy matching your description wearing a striped shirt," which I was wearing at the time, "on a bicycle with a mustache was going through mailboxes in the neighborhood near KBTM."
Huh.
I mean, there's a lot of coincidence here. So they said, "We're going to need to bring you in for questioning." I said, "Well, I'm on my bike. You just want me to ride my bike down to the police station and you can follow me?" He turns on the lights and we go 10 blocks.
Oh, no.
Down to the police station, which, as you know, is right down from KBTM at the time.
Uh-huh.
And I'm on my bike leading this police car. I was in there for about 5 minutes before they realized they had the wrong guy.
Yeah.
But that was the summer I got arrested. But, yeah, I left in the fall of 72 to go to KARN. And I was homesick. I got homesick for KBTM for about the first few months because KARN was in a competitive situation. Within 3 months, I was on the morning show at KARN up against one of the radio legends in Central Arkansas, Brother Hal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I worked with him a little.
I'm 22 years old against this man who had dominated morning radio. It is February of 1973. The first book would come out in, I would get that in June of 73, and Brother Hal had an incredible 32, and I had an 8.
Hey.
I got killed.
Yeah. And Ted Snyder owned KARN?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had gotten KARN. He'd gone into Union National Bank in 1970, I believe it was, and gotten a $1 million loan, gulp, which in 1970 was a... But he made it work. He would later sell all those properties he would eventually get.
Mm-hmm.
But he was not necessarily a high roller, but a man who was not afraid to jump in.
Yeah, no. Even when I worked there 15 years ago, and even then he'd call on Sunday mornings and make suggestions and tell you, hey, make sure you include and all of this.
Yeah.
So
that he really listened was on weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
Man, I made him mad one day.
Huh?
Oh, Lord. He'd been stuck in traffic on new I-630. I-630 hadn't been that old. And he comes flying into the control room because we had missed we didn't know what the traffic problem was. And, oh, he was so mad because he'd been stuck in traffic, and we hadn't said a thing about it. He just got madder and madder and madder.
Well, man, cool.
I'm glad you're doing that on KBTM. That's just...
Yeah, I'm glad to hear it. Now, the place seemed like a really special place, and I was just really bummed out when Clear Channel put the 101.9 off the air last fall after being first FM in the state and just the history of it so that they could put a new low-power station on the air in Memphis in a bigger market. But, that's a downside of corporate radio ownership today, just kind of disregard the history. Same thing with the KARN, too, these days.
I'm choosing my words carefully here. There is no upside to corporate radio.
Yeah, good point. I'll agree. That's why I've been in public radio for the last 9 years.
There is no upside. What you do is corporate radio has made the product so bland and in an effort to maximize profit and minimize expense to satisfy stockholders. The product has gotten so watered down And you talk about diversity. There is no diversity in radio.
Mm-hmm.
It's corporate.
Yeah.
It's all coast to coast. It's all most fun in the morning, most music all day. KW, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, Ted Snyder, I mean, he had, his name was attached to the radio station, and he, being parts of the, you know, in the Kiwanis Club and all of that, he had a reputation to uphold, so he wasn't going to let his radio station go to hell or not have significant news coverage. Now, I never, maybe twice in the 2 years I've been back in Little Rock, have I seen KARN actually out somewhere at a story. I mean, it
really?
Just doesn't happen anymore. They don't get out, and it's really sad because it used to be such a big news operation, even for
yeah.
me 15 years ago, and probably even more so back in the 70s. So
I just sign of the times, I guess. People.
Yep. Yep. Well, anything else? Anything else worth adding about KBTM? Anything else come to mind?
It just was a, you know, it just to me. It was just a great launching pad. So full of, and there's so many stories that come out of it, out of that, those years. And one of these days, I'll sit down and try and write out every story that comes to mind with KBTM,
yeah.
which may take me the last part of my career, but it was absolutely phenomenal.
Great. Well, Craig, I really appreciate your time. This adds a lot more juice to it. I knew there were a lot of good stories inside you.
No. The thing I listened to the other day is still with me, and I really appreciate it.
Great. All right, well, thanks again.
All right, thank you.